Well, today's class is called The Detox for Better Athletic Performance and a More Active Life.
I'm
and
Judy.
And who else just joined the call?
Judy.
Hi, Judy. I'm glad you're here. We're just getting started.
Okay.
Hi. Who else just joined us?
Hi, my name is Gary.
Hi, Gary. I'm glad you're here. And who
Thank
was
you.
That before Gary joined on?
Denise is here.
Hi, Denise. I'm so glad you're here.
Great. Thanks.
Well, we've got quite a few people here, so I'm going to just press star 5 to mute everyone. And then I'm going to start the class, and then I will unmute myself so that people will have an opportunity to ask questions every 5 or 10 minutes. So I'm going to go ahead and mute everybody, but you'll still be able to hear me.
Should we mute ourselves?
So again, today's class is called Detox for Better Athletic Performance and a More Active Life. And I'm really thrilled to be talking about detox because I believe that doing a regular nutritional detox program once or twice a year is essential to staying healthy in the modern world. And just before I get going a little further about talking about how detox supports having a more fun, active life, I'm just going to share a little bit about myself. My name's Anasuya Basil. I'm a certified nutrition consultant. I've maintained a practice in the Bay Area for 15 years doing nutrition, cranial sacral therapy, and acupressure. I do nutrition by phone with clients from around the country. I'm in Chico on Tuesdays in the Bay Area every other week. And, you know, I've been leading regular group detoxification programs since 2006, and I'm especially thrilled because this fall I'm going to be offering the fall detox by teleclass so that people from all over can join in. I personally experience a real boost in my health each time I do a detox, and it's so much easier to do it as a group, so I'm really happy to be offering it. I generally offer it twice a year, and it's so very exciting for me to see other detox participants have, you know, big breakthroughs in their health as well. I've had people go off their asthma inhalers, people see differences in their triglycerides and cholesterol measurements on blood tests. I've had people realize that they weren't depressed anymore, have better sleep, and better moods and energy. And today I'm going to talk about how detox really helps us having better muscle health. And, you know, if you experience fatigue after exercise, if you have slow recovery after an exercise or soreness, if you have difficulty losing weight even though you're exercising a lot or exercising regularly, and if you have difficulty concentrating, you would really benefit from having better nutritional support for your muscles. There's three areas of muscle health that I'll focus on tonight, and all these three areas are addressed in my detox program, which starts October 19th. But tonight we're just going to talk about how it affects the muscles. So the three areas of muscle health that I'm going to talk about are one, muscle health, mitochondria, and toxins. And number two, muscle health and food sensitivities. And number three, muscle health and blood sugar balance. So I'll talk about the mitochondria and toxins, and then I'll take the call off of the group mute so that you'll be able to ask questions about it. And then after each issue, I'll give you a nutrition tip so that you don't have to wait for the detox to start helping yourself. You can start right away. So muscle health, mitochondria, and toxins. I love talking about mitochondria. They are so important and make such a difference for us. Mitochondria are the energy generators inside cells, and there are hundreds to thousands of them in each cell, and they're really concentrated in muscle cells. They're also concentrated in the heart because, remember, the heart is another kind of muscle. Mitochondria themselves have a really short life. In humans, it's estimated that they survive for a few weeks or months. So that means that we're constantly having to create new mitochondria or new energy generators for ourselves. Interestingly, the more you exercise, you notice that you have the more you exercise, the more you have the energy to exercise. And that's because the more you exercise, the more you stimulate the creation of new mitochondria. Regular exercise also increases the amount of mitochondria in the brain, and that's why regular exercise is so good for brain function. Toxins create many problems for the mitochondria, though. So in our modern world, we are exposed to a lot of toxins, and this is where we can run into trouble for our muscles. Toxins basically cause problems for the mitochondria in a couple ways. For example, one is they interrupt a metabolic process called the citric acid cycle or the Krebs cycle, and that just basically means that they interrupt the process by which mitochondria make energy, so they can't make energy anymore. And then toxins also damage the delicate DNA of the mitochondria, so they cannot replicate. So you can't make more mitochondria. So as your mitochondria die off every few weeks or a few months, you have a harder and harder time making replacements. So toxins in your body mean that you will have smaller amounts of less efficient mitochondria in your muscle cells. Now, just not to dwell on how many toxins we have in the environment, because it's kind of vast, but just here's a factoid. According to the EPA in 2002, there were 7 billion pounds of 651 different chemicals released into the environment. 266 of those chemicals were linked to birth defects. Others are linked to cancer. Others are linked to asthma. Worldwide, there are 80 billion pounds of chemicals released into the environment that year. Toxins are not only chemicals. Some of them that affect the mitochondria are things like heavy metals, like arsenic and mercury, but they're also toxins from molds, things in our diet like alcohol, and it can also be just byproducts of an overgrowth of bad bacteria or candida in the gut. If you want more information about chemical toxins in our healthcare body care products, or in our building products, things like that, I recommend going to the website EWG.org. You know, I don't dwell on that feeling of being overwhelmed by how many toxins there are in the body because I believe in the miracle of the human body, and it has an ability to get rid of toxins. So rather than fall into despair about the sorry state of our environment, you know, I really focus on strengthening our organs of detoxification so that we're able to detoxify and get those toxins out most effectively. So the nutritional tip that I want to share that you could, you know, start right away is to have more foods in your diet that are high in antioxidants. Antioxidants will help prevent the toxins from having a negative effect on the mitochondria. Mitochondria are very susceptible to oxidative stress, and that's why you want to have antioxidants. And the foods that are highest in antioxidants are the plant foods, typically found in vegetables. And you want to aim for more organic sources of vegetables. So if you have 5 to 9 servings of vegetables a day, and that's 5 to 9 half-cup servings of vegetables a day, that gets you in the right direction. If that seems like an overwhelming amount of vegetables and you're only having 1 or 2 servings a day as it is, just start small and each day or each week, find a new vegetable that you enjoy eating. So make your salads and your veggie choices come from all the colors of the rainbow. You know, red beets, orange carrots, green leaves, red radishes. And another tip about how to get more veggies in your diet is to, you know, prep them in advance. Take a quiet day or a quiet evening, maybe on the weekend. When you go shopping, come back and just chop, clean and chop your vegetables in advance and store them in your fridge in baggies or containers. And that way, when you come home from a hard day at work, it's already prepped for you. You just have to make a quick salad. You have something to snack on or fresh veggies to throw into a stir fry. So that's a little bit about mitochondria and how important they are for muscle health. So I'm just going to come demute, so I'll be open to questions. Oops. Okay. Are people there? Can they talk back? Hello? Uh-oh. How do I unmute?
Okay. There you go.
You're all unmuted. Would anybody like to ask a question about anything that I've said so far?
I'll ask a question before anybody else, I guess, if nobody wants to jump in right now.
Sure, go ahead.
You were just talking about the veggies and how they help with the antioxidants. Is there any particular way to prepare those veggies that would be best, like a steamed as opposed to some other preparation way?
Well, antioxidants are, some of them are susceptible to heat. So they might lower, like vitamin C is an antioxidant that gets reduced when you heat veggies. So like raw is best for antioxidants, but then steaming is not a lot of heat compared to baking. And that's not to say that, you know, veggies that have cooked are no longer valuable. They have other nutrients that are actually more accessible when they're cooked. So I believe in having a blend of raw and cooked. Does that help? Okay, go ahead.
I have a question about juicing, like you know, getting one of these Vitamax, you know, machines and all of that, and adding a number of vegetables and fruits together. Is that beneficial? And as another way to get, you know, a lot of vegetables and fruits into you, and is there any difference between just eating them steamed or raw? Versus doing the juicing, because the juicing is the kind of thing that in some ways is a little bit easier, but I don't know about calories and about the nutrients and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I wouldn't worry about calories per se, but when you're juicing, there are some vegetables that have more sugar in them, like carrots or beets, and so especially those ones, you want to dilute them. So you wouldn't have pure carrot juice because it will make your blood sugar go up. And so you would dilute that maybe a third to a half water. Or you have a little bit of carrot, but you blend it with a vegetable that's not as sweet, like cucumber or celery.
Mm-hmm.
And so diluted vegetable juices are generally better. And then you will not get the fiber from it. And the fiber is good. You know, when you clean out your machine, there's a lot of fiber left over. You could use that, you could put some of those things in, mix it with cooked grains or put them in soups and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you cook them in a soup, then you would get more minerals out of that too.
Okay.
Great.
What about boiling?
You know, the good thing about boiling is that it will help break down the food. It's almost like pre-digesting the food. So, like, for example, taking carrots and, the old-fashioned way of cooking carrots is to make them almost like potatoes where they're, like, mashed up. That's really easy to digest, So people especially who have digestive issues might do better with the cooked carrots. In Chinese medicine, cooked food is often preferable for people with certain patterns, especially digestive patterns that where they can't digest food as well. It also makes the minerals more accessible. Any other questions about vegetables or mitochondria?
Anasuya?
Okay.
It's Elizabeth. Anasuya?
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. Just wondered, you talk about vegetables, but it's not true of fruits, huh?
Well,
in terms of mitochondrial.
No, fruits are also really beneficial, and they do have a lot of antioxidants. And then just the tricky thing about them, especially, is that they're high in fruit sugar or fructose, which you just want to be cautious about overdoing.
Mm-hmm.
Both for a couple of reasons. One, you don't want to raise your blood sugar too much, and you don't want the little microbes in your gut to, you know, the bad ones like candida, yeast, bad bacteria will just have a feast day if you eat a lot of fruit, just like they would if you had a lot of sugar, and you don't want them overgrowing. So a few servings of fruit a day, but I wouldn't do a lot of fruit or fruit juicing.
And the fruit doesn't substitute the vegetables, the 5 to 9. What did you say, 7 to 9?
5 to 9. No, they don't. I mean, you know, I think the max for fruit would be 2 to 3 servings of fruit a day. And after
okay.
that, you're starting to probably get too much sugar in your diet. If it's, you know, especially if it's done on a daily basis. Well, good. Got lots of material to cover, so I'm going to go ahead and put this in lecture mode and go to the next section. The next section that I want to talk about that makes such a big difference for our muscle health is inflammation due to food sensitivities. Food sensitivity is when your immune system sees a particle of food as a foreign invader and launches an attack, which creates inflammation. So food sensitivity is an immune response that creates inflammation in your body. When you have inflammation in your intestines, it prevents you from absorbing all the nutrients from your food. And then you get deficient in certain minerals, and that can create sudden and severe muscle spasms. When you have inflammation in your joints, then you you know, obviously can get swollen joints, and that causes a lot of pain and discomfort. Many people find that arthritis for them is caused by food sensitivities, and when they identify the food sensitivity and remove it, they have much, much less symptoms of arthritis. You know, it's natural to take, or common, maybe let's say, to take aspirin or ibuprofen to deal with the pain. But when it's done on a regular basis, day in, day out, then it can further irritate the lining of intestines. You get short-term relief from the pain, but then you can create longer-term problems with digestion and then nutrient absorption, and then the muscles will get weaker because they won't have the minerals that they need. Some of the most common food sensitivities are gluten and dairy, and then soy, peanuts, eggs, and citrus are other common food sensitivities. In the detox program, we're going to eliminate these foods. And the first week, which is called the pre-cleanse week, is when we slowly cut back on these foods. And if it seems overwhelming to you to cut back on all of them, then you know, just pick the amount that feels manageable to you. For example, not everyone will feel up to eliminating gluten, dairy, soy, peanuts, eggs, and citrus. Some people might just say, let me just do gluten and dairy. Someone might just say, just gluten. And then there are other people who have already eliminated gluten and they want to try eliminating some the rest of them to see. So there's some flexibility in that, in the in any detox program or food elimination program that you do. And that first, when you first start eliminating, you may experience some fatigue or mild aches as the immune complexes or the antibodies start to clear from your system and the inflammation starts to go down. But then after that clearing happens, then you can, that's when you start to experience an increase in energy and better strength for your muscles. I had one client who had experienced this issue, and once she got off of gluten, she had a lot less digestive problems, and she became a successful competitive swimmer. So the nutrition tip that you could start right away is, if you suspect that you might be sensitive to something, for example, gluten, you can take a couple of weeks, even a month, and just explore alternatives. So the first step, really, when you're thinking about doing an elimination, is to explore all the alternatives. See what foods you enjoy that would make a lovely, delightful substitute for you. And then take at least a couple weeks to eliminate that food. I'm going to take questions and come back on, open up the call again. All right, so who has a question about food sensitivities and muscle strength?
Some of what you're talking about is making me think about what happens with, chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia.
Absolutely.
Like what you're saying about the mitochondria, that's one of the things. I mean, so much isn't known, but that they're pointing to, and I don't know that much about the food, but the candida, and there isn't a lot that they tell you about, you know, in medicine, certainly, but that I even read about food and how it can help.
Absolutely. I have worked with several clients with fibromyalgia, and they start to make some of these changes, and it really makes a big difference. And did you have a particular question about it, or was it just like your thoughts?
No, it just seems like a lot of what you're talking about. I guess my question was if because so much of what you're saying about the muscles,
yeah,
and you know, inflammation, and it just seems very familiar to what I've read about it.
Right. Well, I do believe, like, it's like fibromyalgia is like an extreme form of some of these things that I'm talking about. I do think that people who don't have fibromyalgia but have some of muscle soreness, you know, that certainly is not as bad as fibromyalgia, have some of these similar issues, just like on a lower level. You know, when they're more in an extreme level, then it's more like fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
You know, there's a Dr. David Brady has, written a paper on how there's a false fibromyalgia that's really mitochondrial insufficiency, and that's not true fibromyalgia, according to him. So that's kind of interesting.
Mm. Right.
Anybody else have any other
thoughts? I have a question.
Questions, yeah.
Tell me, this is Pam, tell me a little bit more about food sensitivities and digestive disorders. I think you said like stomach pain or...
Well, some of the common digestive symptoms for food sensitivities are bloating, gas, stomach pain, stomach cramps. You don't have to have all of them. It might just be bloating. And, when you eat a food that your immune system is reacting to, then that inflammation in the gut actually starts to degrade the lining of the intestines. And then you can have what's called intestinal permeability or leaky gut. And then toxins and incompletely broken down food gets out of the digestive system and into the bloodstream and create more inflammation and more immune response. So oftentimes when people do eliminate the foods that they are sensitive to, they will notice that, like they have a flat stomach, for example. You know, they thought that they had all this fat there, but it turned out that it was just, gas from the irritation and the lack of being able to digest things. And does that help answer your question?
Absolutely. Perfect. Thank you.
Great.
What exactly is gluten, and how is it seen in food?
Gluten is, thank you for asking that question.
I'm sorry, it's such a simplistic thing, but
you're absolutely right.
I don't know how I mentioned it
without really explaining it, so
yeah.
I'm glad you asked, because gluten is a protein that's found in wheat and barley, rye, and then oats as well, and it's also in spelt and kamut, and in, I think, triticale, but, you know, primarily in wheat, rye, and barley. And it's fascinating because wheat was only introduced into Europe in the Middle Ages, and then it was... So the American forms of wheat have been hybridized so much to be extra glutinous because that makes like the really squishy kind of Wonder Bread or the really big bagels and things like that. And that has just made it more indigestible. And so it's 30% of Europeans are actually have the gene for gluten intolerance, which is quite a lot. And, you know, it's really not a small thing. There's a study in the Journal of American Medical Association that found that people who have either diagnosed or undiagnosed gluten sensitivity had a higher risk of death, mostly from heart disease and cancer. And this was a study that looked at 30,000 patients and examined, you know, deaths of these people over a period of, 30 or 40 years. So there was a 39% increase of risk of death in those with celiac disease, which is like the classic gluten intolerance, and then 72% increase of risk of death in those who had gut inflammation related to gluten, and 35% increased risk of those with gluten sensitivity but no celiac disease. So isn't that kind of, that's kind of a shocking statistic to me, and it was a big study. It was, you know, Journal of American Medical Association is a very well-established, peer-reviewed journal. And they also estimate that 99% of people who have a problem with eating gluten don't even know that they have it. So, and apparently there's been a 400% increase of this problem over the past 40 years. So undiagnosed gluten sensitivity, gluten intolerance costs, you know, not cost people their lives. It costs a lot of healthcare money, and people get chronically ill from it. So they also, I'll just add this one thing. This is just so fascinating to me, even though it's kind of horrifying. But the New England Journal of Medicine listed 55 diseases that can be caused by eating gluten, including osteoporosis, irritable bowel disease, inflammatory bowel disease, anemia, cancer, fatigue, canker sores, which doesn't sound like as big a disease, but rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, multiple sclerosis, other autoimmune diseases, and then also linked to psychiatric and neurological diseases, including anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, dementia, migraines, epilepsy, nerve damage, and autism. So I think it's really important for everyone to go through a period and just to see if they are, if they notice a difference in the way they feel. Generally, going off gluten for 2 to 4 weeks sometimes gives people an idea if they notice a difference. I didn't notice a difference until I went off of it for 6 months, but I tried many times going off of it for a month at a time. And then finally I just went off of it for 6 months, and then I really noticed that I was less puffy and had more energy and easier to maintain a healthy weight and things like that.
And what was it you eliminated?
That was eliminating gluten. So I eliminated wheat, barley, oats, and spelt and kamut. Those are the main ones. It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anybody else have any questions about gluten or anything else that we've talked about so far? I will say that, you know, I've done lab tests of people's food sensitivities, and eggs is another one that comes up quite often, and dairy. So those are the three ones that I see the most. And then soy. Soy is in a lot of foods these days, and more people are getting sensitive to soy.
Oh, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Were you able to tell by doing some lab tests if you were sensitive to gluten, or did you just find that out by removing it from your diet?
Well, at the time, it was tricky to do it with lab tests. I had one that was sort of, that came out as very borderline, and then one that was negative. But there's so many different ways to test for gluten, so it wasn't conclusive. And then, so I finally did it, really identified it for myself.
Okay.
With going off of it for about 6 months.
Is there a better lab test now that's more reliable?
There are a few different ones. There's Interolabs.
Okay.
There's more and more genetic testing so that you can see if you have the gene for a gluten intolerance, and I believe that was Interolabs that does that.
Okay.
And then there's another one, and it begins with a Z, and I can't remember it, but it is a new one that tests like in several different ways so that you can really see back and forth.
Okay.
If it's an issue for you.
Okay. I know Interolabs.
Okay, good.
Thanks.
All right. Well, let me go on to the next section. And I'm going to go put myself on the lecture mode. So I want to talk about blood sugar balancing and muscle strength. And it really comes to mind because I have a story that came up this past weekend when I went on a hike with a group of people. And one of my companions ate a bowl of cereal with low-fat milk and a cup of coffee for breakfast. And this is a really typical breakfast for many people. I see this on diet records of my clients all the time. I had tea, bacon, steak, green beans, broccoli, carrots, and 2 slices of gluten-free toast with ghee. Ghee is clarified butter. So this is not necessarily an example of a detox breakfast, but that's what I had for breakfast that day. We all went for this wonderful hike in the foothills. It was a couple of hours. And I stopped frequently to look at animal tracks and plants because nature study is a passion for me. So then I had to jog to catch up with the group. So I was doing a lot of jogging as well as just walking through the foothills. So at the end of the hike, my friend felt really tired. You know, the one who had the the cereal and coffee for breakfast. He felt faint and dizzy and very hungry. And I experienced steady energy with no hunger. And really, the only difference was our different breakfasts. You know, my friend has muscles that are more developed than mine. But because he broke a 10-hour fast with a high-carbohydrate breakfast with little fat and protein, he digested that really quickly. And so when you digest a high-carbohydrate breakfast quickly, your blood sugar goes up, and then the glucose gets used by the cells or maybe stored as fat, and then you're back to having low blood sugar. When you have more fat and protein in your meals, you digest it more slowly and have steadier energy. In the detox program, you know, we eat plenty of food, and it's not a fasting program at all. And we make sure that there's regular protein throughout the day. And healthy fats are completely encouraged. At least 40 grams of protein are consumed a day. And good sources of animal protein for non-vegetarians are fine on my detox program. The detox program is really a blood sugar balancing program, and people just remark so much about how much calmer and steadier their energy is. So for good, you could have like really big muscles, but if you're not giving your muscles a steady supply of blood sugar, then they're not going to be able to perform. I came across a really interesting study that found a correlation between insulin resistance and decreased muscle strength. And insulin resistance is related to blood sugar balance because when you have a high-carb meal, your body secretes insulin, that's just a hormone from your pancreas, and that insulin takes the sugar out of the blood and brings it into the cells. Now, if you have a pattern of eating over time where you have high-carb meals frequently, then your body becomes more and more resistant to the insulin. It's like your cells don't really respond to the insulin anymore, and your blood sugar stays high, but your cells don't have the energy. And, you know, this has a lot of negative effects, such as increased risk for heart disease, cancer, and diabetes, but it certainly has an effect on the muscles. And in this study at Diabetes Care, they took a group of non-diabetic adults, and they found the connection between insulin resistance and this decreased strength of the quadriceps muscle. You know, the quadriceps is that big leg muscle in the front of your thigh. The more insulin resistant a person was, the less muscle strength they had. Now, insulin resistance is not a rare phenomenon. I imagine that there are some people on our call tonight who have it and may not know it because it's estimated that a half to two-thirds of the American population has some degree of insulin resistance. So the detox program is a program that really helps you develop insulin sensitivity. So the nutritional tip that you can start with right away is to really eat a breakfast that includes protein and fats as well as carbs. For example, this is one that I had last week. I didn't have a lot of time, but I made myself a pot of quinoa and a pot of lentils. And so I would mix those together and had it with butter for breakfast. Quinoa is a grain. It's a high-protein grain, and lentils is a type of legume, and that is one of the higher plant forms of protein. And you could certainly have another example would be to have some kind of meat or fish with veggies. That's kind of like what I had the day of the hike. Another idea, if you want something more a sweet kind of thing, would be to have another grain that's higher in protein is amaranth with nuts and seeds and coconut milk. Coconut milk is a what's called a medium-chain triglyceride. So it's a fat. It's a special fat because you can burn it for energy quite easily. You know, those are just a couple of ideas for breakfast. Certainly some people that want to spend, sometimes people just only have a little bit of time and they don't feel like eating breakfast. So in that case, maybe a small breakfast with a little fruit and nuts, followed by, within a couple hours, a more substantial breakfast or very early lunch, so that you are, especially if you have weight issues, it is ideal to eat the bulk of your calories in the first half of the day because your metabolism is faster and you burn calories more quickly in the first part of your day. And people gain weight more easily if they eat more in the afternoon and evening. So let me just be open to questions again. Let me... Okay, so I'm open for questions. Does anybody have any?
I wanted to ask something.
Sure. Who's this?
This is Bina.
Hi, Bina.
Hi. You were saying that it's important to eat a lot of the calories at the or earlier in the day.
Yeah.
What if you're not hungry first thing in the morning, and actually you can go pretty much all day without having a lot of hunger, but then it sort of ramps up around 4.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're fasting at night. If you say you're, people generally, they're sleeping, you know, winding down at the end of the day and sleeping, they go maybe 8, 9, 10 to 12 hours without eating. So that's during the night. And then the reason that you don't go into a coma because of that is because you have stored blood sugar in your liver. And the reason that you can get that blood sugar out of the liver and into your blood, that stored sugar out of the liver and into the blood, is by your adrenals giving the signal. So basically what that means is when you're on empty for that long, your adrenals, which are your glands that respond to stress, give out an emergency signal and say, this is an emergency, we're going to go into a coma unless liver, you let go of some of that glycogen stores or the stored sugar. It's not very nice to yourself. It's harsh for your body to be using your adrenals, your stress organs, your stress hormones to get your energy from. So it's not a good strategy. A lot of people do it. It's not unusual, but it is a way of exhausting your adrenals and throwing off other hormones in your body. I don't recommend it.
How would you help a patient or a client?
Yeah, I know some people just are not hungry. They don't feel like eating. Well, if you have coffee and caffeine in the morning, that can also make you not hungry. So the thought is to have a small handful of nuts would even help if you're really someone that can't eat in the morning. The other option is to make a protein smoothie, a protein drink, and sip it over, an hour or so that you're not just having a whole meal, but you're sipping it. And some people feel much better when they do that. So having smaller meals it can really help with that. How does that sound to you?
It sounds good. It's something that I struggle with often. I'll have what you're saying. I'll have like a handful of almonds and pear for breakfast.
Uh-huh.
I'll have something for lunch. But it doesn't matter how much I eat during the day. I always have this extra hunger at night. So maybe I need to look at something else.
Yeah, you might find if you did eat a little bit more in the first part of your day, then you might not have as much hunger at night. And the other thing that, you know, one of the signs of insulin resistance is eating a meal and then still feeling hungry afterwards, like, or wanting something sweet, craving a sweet, like you have to have a sweet after a meal. That can sometimes be a sign of insulin resistance. And that's possible. I don't know if that's true for you, but that might be the case.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions on the blood sugar balance?
Can I ask a question about what is a protein smoothie? What would you include in that?
Well, I'll tell you how I make my protein smoothies is I use water as a base. Other people use some of the nut or seed milks or rice milks. If you're not allergic to dairy, you could have milk. Or coconut milk is another product that's on the market a lot. So you have some kind of liquid. You use a good quality protein powder, and the main one I would suggest avoiding is soy protein. Whey protein has many health benefits if you're not sensitive to dairy. There's also rice protein powder and pea protein powder and hemp protein powder. And you want to get generally, 15 to 25 grams of protein in there. You can add to that like a half to a cup of berries. Berries have some nice fiber in it. There are the lower glycemic fruits. They might be sweet, but the fiber helps slow down the absorption of the sugar. So berries, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries. And then you could add, another great thing to add is flax seeds. And flax seeds will usually, if you leave the blender on longer, they'll usually break up in the blender. Another seed that is nice to add that is good for fiber is called chia seeds, which gotten in the health food store in the bulk bins, and they're becoming more available now, C-H-I-A, chia seeds. And if you don't like those textures, you don't have to add the seeds in. But that's a basic thing. You can certainly add other kinds of fruits. Some people add kale in. Some people add parsley. You know, they make it more like a vegetable thing. So, but it usually you have some kind of protein powder.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a question about the insulin resistance you were talking about.
Yeah.
You were talking about how that kind of like built up over time. Is that a reverse state? Let's say you have built up insulin resistance. Reverse that?
Yes. I think that you can change your diet and reverse that. And I've even... I think people who have, there's some people who are just in the early stages of diabetes. I think it's possible to reverse diabetes in the early stages. But diabetes is a kind of, type 2 diabetes is a type of insulin resistance. So, yes, I think you can change your diet and make your, there's many ways of making your cells more sensitive to insulin again.
Thank you. Thank
you. Well, we're just running to the end of the class. I just want to let you know that I do have another class where I'm talking October 5th about how the detox of women's hormones, whether your women are having PMS or they're preparing for pregnancy or they're going through menopause. So that's October 5th. And you're very welcome to sign up again for that free class. Love talking about detox. It's fascinating to me. And I'm very excited for the detox to start October 19th, both for myself personally, because I feel better when I start doing it. Also because I'm excited to do it as a group and to have other people share that experience. Does anyone have any questions about what we talked about today or about the detox program that starts October 19th? No? All right. Well, I so enjoyed sharing this information with you. Was that a question?
Yes. Anasuya, it's Elizabeth.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. So can you just tell me, you've probably written it somewhere, but could you just give a quick overview of the detox program, how long it is, and some of the principles of it?
Sure.
Or did you do that in the beginning? I came in a little late.
No, I didn't. So the detox program starts October 19th, and the first week is a pre-cleanse week where we go over what to slowly eliminate. So we'll be slowly eliminating caffeine, alcohol, sugar, and some of the sensitivities like gluten and dairy. And if people want to also include soy, eggs, citrus, and eliminate those as well, then that's the week that you kind of you find your food substitutes and slowly reduce down. And then that's also the week that you order the designs for health supplements, and those, then you have them by the time of the second class, and we go over in the second class how to use them. But basically there's Paleo Cleanse and Paleo Meal are basically, we'll make protein shakes that have nutrients that support liver detoxification, so that if you have any, sometimes when you eliminate things, you can feel the toxins leaving your body and feeling aches and pains and headachiness. It's very short-lived, but the designs for health products are created so that that is minimized. So there's some supplements and meal replacements there. But when I say meal replacements, it doesn't mean that you're going on a liquid diet. There's plenty of solid food, like a lot of vegetables to eat, and there's also there's a meal a day that you're having as a regular meal with no shakes involved. And, we would meet regularly once a week. We're going to have four, meetings by phone. And there's also an online forum, so I'll be posting additional information on the forum, and people can share their questions and experiences there too.
How long does it go on?
It's 3 weeks altogether, so it's four meetings over a period of 3 weeks.
I see. So the fast or the detox itself is 2 weeks and 3 weeks with the pre.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. I think our last meeting is November 9th.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, it is very interesting, and it's much easier to do it with a group of people. I think people learn from each other, and it's just you just feel the support of the group when you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I will also just add, since I have a couple minutes, I'll just add that there's a spiritual component in that. As we eliminate toxins from the body, that it correlates with letting go of unwanted stored emotions or thoughts or stuck ways in our psyche, in our spiritual life. So I've noticed this over and over again with myself and with the other participants that. After the detox, it's like almost like you can move forward with another area of your life. You kind of let go of some chunk of what you've been stuck with. You get out of a rut, and you're able to just, move with more vigor and more vitality.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage people, and I stress it during the detox, to take quiet time, contemplation, meditation, walks in nature, doing quiet art that's or crafts or playing musical instruments, things that nourish you. So it's another way that being a part of the detox really encourages you to develop these ways of nourishing yourself and having good self-care habits. Well, good. I think this brings us to the end of the class. And I just want to thank you all again for your attention and your participation. I totally enjoyed being with you. And I'll be sending the recording out. And you're welcome to ask me any further questions by email or give me a call. So thank you so much.
Thank you,
Anastasia.
Thank
you. Very good.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.